Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. A man whose intelligence I admire greatly and who I am very grateful brings it to bear here at Secure Freedom Radio each week at this time is Bill Walton. He is a former master of the universe on Wall Street, as Tom Wolfe used to say, and now a recovering master of the universe who has devoted himself to helping conservatives and others in our country think through and address effectively public policy issues of great moment. We're always grateful for his time. Let's address first and foremost, because you have a foot in both of these worlds, corporate America and public policy. And at the moment, many prominent American corporations are engaging very directly and very aggressively in trying to mau-mau the state of Georgia, whose legislature and executive branch have recently enacted a very important piece of election integrity legislation into rescinding, repealing, or otherwise deep-sixing that legislation. What's going on? What is it that is prompting these, corporate titans like Coke and Delta Airlines and Apple to engage and do so vociferously in this particular issue, Bill?
The corporations in the last 10, 15, 20, 25 years have really begun listening mostly entirely to the left, and they've moved into woke mode, and they think they're serving their shareholders best by caving into the demands of the Democrats and the radical left, and the cause du jour right now is H.R. 1, I guess S.1 now, and it's in the Senate, which would radically federalize our election laws to basically, it sets the guidelines in place so that Democrats could keep in power for a very long time. And what's happened in Georgia is that Georgia enacted some laws saying, gee, you need an ID, a voter ID or picture ID in order to vote. And Delta and Coca-Cola have weighed in on behalf of the Democrats saying, oh, no, this is a terrible thing. And the irony is that Delta, the CEO, has come out saying, oh, it's terrible. They're asking for a voter ID.
Racist.
Well, try boarding an airplane without a photo ID. It's impossible.
Exactly. And the thing that I'm certainly most impressed by, Bill, is that they're not just expressing their opposition to this. They're using corporate power. And others are as well, of course, the Major League Baseball, pulling out the All-Stars game, for example, from Georgia, to coerce, to really blackmail the state into taking these steps. And I guess one of the things that, coming back to what you were just touching on there, it seems that this is really bigger game than just Georgia. These guys are setting the predicate for what is really the left's agenda. And to have, for that matter, through this S1 or HR1, the ability to essentially say, hey, we're going to use whatever tools we can to essentially ensure there is no election integrity any longer.
This is signaling big time that if you're a state and you want to pass a voter ID law or something else that would protect a free and fair election, you better be careful because corporate America is going to come down on you hard. And your state's going to be punished. And we saw this in another issue with Kristi Noem in South Dakota on the trans men and women's sports. And first we get MLB in Georgia, and then we've got the NCAA in South Dakota. And it's really stunning, Frank. People used to say big business and, it was on the radical right. Well, big business is now on the radical left. And corporate, the Business Roundtable, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, the Financial Services Roundtable, you name every large organization of big companies in D.C. and they're all on the left. And you know, the left has worked assiduously for the last several decades. First, they got control of the community relations group, and then they got control of philanthropy. Then they got control of the marketing departments. And then you look at what's happening with the online and the social media companies. Well, the big companies are dependent on social media to sell their product and get their word out. Well, they're now mindful that if they go the wrong direction on these issues, they are also going to be canceled by Google, Facebook, Twitter, and the rest.
Somebody else that's also doing some canceling is the Chinese Communist Party, Bill. And you've been spending a lot of time on your terrific podcast, The Bill Walton Show, addressing the various challenges we're facing from China. What do you make of what the Chinese are now doing to try to control big tech in China, in addition to trying to get access to all of their data about, well, among other things, us?
Well, we've seen the Chinese Communist Party's really gone full out 100% totalitarian, and they're eager to control every nook and cranny of the population and also their businesses. And they've cracked down on the tech companies, the so-called platform companies. And China, it's a sophisticated economy. Almost a third of its GDP is information technology related. And, you know, in this case, yeah, I'm worried about our data protection, because what can happen there can happen here. But this may be a bridge too far, because they're really clamping down on these platform companies and trying to get them regulated even more than they are. A lot of the innovation that occurs in these companies is going to be, it's going to have a chilling effect on it. I don't know. China could be cutting off its long-term nose to save its face short-term.
Let's hope so. I guess my bottom line.
Well, yeah, I got to give us an optimistic read.
I know. I know. That would be the good news. All kidding aside, what we're watching is, as you've indicated, a growing assertiveness and, well, repression of the Chinese Communist Party internally, even with respect to these foreign companies. And it does seem as though this would be a moment when those who have been bankrolling China, including your old friends on Wall Street, should be giving some real pause, don't you think?
Well, yeah. I mean, if you're an investor, the Chinese tech stocks are down 20%, then the companies that are listed in the United States are not, well, partially listed in the United States, they're off about 20-25%. Since the SEC under Trump said, gee, guys, if you want to go public or be public here, you got to give us legitimate financial information, which they hadn't been doing up until now. And so they're playing a complicated game. The Chinese leadership, though, thinks they've got the whip hand because of what's happening with Biden and the left. I mean, They listen to left and the Democrats in the United States celebrate things like Black Lives Matter. And then they go to a meeting, what was it, a couple of weeks ago, and they lecture Tony Blinken and
they know they
Jake
can get
Sullivan
away with it.
On our,
we're going to talk more about all of that with Trevor Loudon and Sam Faddis in the segments ahead. Thank you, Bill Walton, for yours very important essay and insights, as always. We appreciate you joining us. We'll talk with you again next week. And I want to remind our audience that there's more on all of this corporate tyranny at stopcorporatetyranny.org. Next up, we'll speak with Kyle Scheidler about domestic terrorism and more. Straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney. You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back, and it's a special pleasure to welcome one of my colleagues at the Center for Security Policy. His name is Kyle Scheidler. We are privileged to have him visit us periodically and the rest of the time to benefit from the great work that he does as the senior analyst and director of the Center's Homeland Security projects. He is a great resource. Notably, last year was invited to testify before the Senate Judiciary Committee on domestic terrorism and what we are now facing in that regard. It's become a lot more confusing since the change of administration, needless to say, but it's high time that we start really thinking this through carefully and getting it right. And Kyle is part of doing just that. Kyle Scheidler, it's good to have you with us as always. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Frank. It's always a pleasure to be here.
I want to visit with you first and foremost about the latest incident in which somebody attacked the Capitol grounds, in this case, murdering a police officer. It's getting considerably less attention, it's fair to say, than did the last incident up there on the 6th of January. Much smaller in scale, of course, this was, but still, the sort of upshot of it, I really am anxious to get your thoughts on this, Kyle, is that they can't seem to figure out what was motivating the individual who was responsible for this car wielded as a weapon against a police checkpoint on the Capitol grounds. What is your take on all of that?
Well, it's certainly an interesting situation, Frank. So on Friday, an individual identified as 25-year-old Noah Green, originally from Indiana, was shot dead by police after he rammed his vehicle into a police barricade. He killed one officer and injured another. The homicide of that officer would actually, unlike the January 6th incidents, where there's still no yet confirmed evidence of a homicide of a police officer, although many law enforcement, many media agencies have insisted that there was, this is a real case, clear case of the murder of a Capitol police officer. And yet, curiously, it's making very little media attention. Part of the reason that may be is because, as MSNBC reported very early on Friday after the incident, the individual Green appears to have been a member of the Nation of Islam, which is a black supremacist organization with strong anti-Semitic and anti-white hatred and biases. They were even formally identified as a hate group by the Southern Poverty Law Center, which has since eliminated their coverage of black supremacist groups in order to avoid appearing biased. But so this is the background of this individual, which very quickly was hushed up. Facebook pulled down his page, as they routinely do now, making it very difficult for anyone to investigate or do any kind of journalism as to what the ideology behind individuals who commit these attacks is. And so but we do know that he was a member of the Nation of Islam. He was a major supporter of Louis Farrakhan. And all of this was very quickly hushed up.
This follows a pattern, it seems, and you've documented this, I think, quite carefully, Kyle, in which we are immediately after an incident of this kind told what we are allowed to know about the subject, which is basically, there's nothing to see here, folks, move along. I'm struck by the evidence that you've just presented that suggests that there is something to see here. What is the nature of the sort of taboo that has been placed on, well, black identity extremist groups, for one thing, and more generally for Islamists as well, that prompts the FBI almost reflexively, like an incantation, to say, oh, there's no terrorism here, immediately after the incident, when it's impossible to know whether that's what it was at work, or jihadism for that matter, or something else?
Yeah, I mean, we saw that case, this to be the case on Friday, when media started to report that law enforcement sources were telling them that there was no evidence of terrorism in this incident. Despite the fact that the suspect's name had not yet been released, that the scene was still hot for all pretense and purposes, there's simply no way that you can convince me that within an hour of an incident occurring, you have gone through a suspect's background to determine his ideology, who he may know, what his network is, with any degree of clarity. And yet, in some cases, as you noted, particularly among black identity extremists or jihadist types, they are very quick to rush to make this judgment. And in other cases where they may perceive it to be a white supremacist or right, quote unquote, right wing terrorist, then they are very willing to say, well, this might be terrorism. We better hold on and look as deep as possible. Now, my opinion is we should look as deep as possible every time.
Every time.
But that's not the way they tend to approach these things.
It seems as though we're watching the politicization of the law enforcement agencies. And to the extent that that is what's going on, that it has to be interfering with their performance of their responsibilities. Does it not, Kyle?
Yeah. I mean, the point that I have been making repeatedly, Frank, as you know very well, bureaucracies exist by categorizing and sort of shaping and putting things into boxes. And if something doesn't fit in a box, a bureaucracy typically ignores it or pretends it doesn't happen or puts it in a box that it does have. And that's what we're seeing with jihadism, with Black identity extremism. Because of the politicization of law enforcement, we have essentially the removal of these categories. So law enforcement and investigators have no frame of reference in which to put incidents like the one that occurred on Friday, because they're not allowed to give it a name. They're not allowed to identify it as belonging to some kind of category that can be reasonably judged. And as a result, they end up telling you, well, we don't really know why this happened. He's just a lone wolf. Sorry. You know, we got nothing for you.
It seems wrong on many different levels, factually wrong on the one hand, but also wrong in the sense that it is compromising the ability to get done what the public safety and, for that matter, the national security may require. And Kyle, this brings me to, speaking of national security, another very important agency or department of our government, the Defense Department. There's a lot of chatter at the moment about these training programs that are going on as a result of the effort by Lloyd Austin, the Secretary of Defense, to root out white supremacists and other extremists in the military. This was, of course, something that we were told was made very much a concern by the presence of veterans in some numbers among the Trump supporters who were told were engaged in an insurrection on the Capitol back in the 6th of January. What do you know about the sort of training that's being done of these military personnel? And does it exacerbate some of the concerns we were just talking about, that the same sort of politicization, if not weaponization, of the Defense Department against domestic political opponents of this president in particular seems to be part of what's afoot?
Yeah, I mean, what I have heard from individuals who have been required to undergo the training and what I have seen from slides from the presentations of the various services that have leaked in the media, everything suggests that it's totally one-sided. It is only about what they perceive to be militia, what they would call militia violent extremism, or racially and ethnically motivated violent extremism, by which they mean white supremacy. It does not in any way include anarchist extremism. It does not include jihadist ideology. And this is really concerning. I mean, as you and your audience know well, Frank, there have been multiple examples of jihadists inside the U.S. military who have targeted their compatriots for murder. I mean, best known, of course, is the Fort Hood shooting, but there are multiple examples of this. And yet there was no stand down for any of those incidents. There was no need to help educate, service members about what to look for if one of their fellow service members might be exploring Islamist or jihadist ideology. That did not occur. Yet we have this incident where it's totally one-sided. You know, the military obviously has a need to protect itself from foreign ideologies that would interfere with their oaths to the Constitution. But this is the first time they're considering doing anything like this when they have had this problem, as we've documented, for decades or more.
Mm-hmm. And what seems to be particularly worrying is that they're sort of accompanying a lot of this with the idea of purging people from the military as well. And the question is, are these people anything other than patriotic, conservative Americans who may have supported the last commander in chief? And either way, and this is a matter of perhaps some conjecture at the moment, but I think Kyle Scheidler, it is a predictable consequence of all of this is some people, particularly who may be extraordinarily effective warriors for our country, are going to simply decide whether they're purged or not. They're not going to want to hang out in this kind of operation, and they will, cease to be volunteers in the service of our country, which I think will be to its great detriment, alas. Kyle, we have to leave it at that for the moment. Much more to talk with you about, and we hope to do so again next week if you'll make yourself available once again. We appreciate your time as well as your expertise tremendously. Keep up the great work you do at the Center for Security Policy. We'll talk soon. Next up, we'll speak with Trevor Loudon about another piece of this problem, the involvement of the Chinese Communist Party in various parts of our government at the moment and what it might mean for all of us. Straight ahead.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
We're back, and it's always a pleasure to say we're joined by Trevor Loudon, one of the great authorities on matters involving the security of our country, particularly in the face of efforts by enemies within to undermine it on behalf of, well, foreign powers in some cases, in other cases, hostile ideologies, purpose being to weaken, if not actually destroy, our nation. His book, The Enemies Within, and film of the same title are required reading and viewing, I believe, because they document a very serious problem. We're going to talk with him a little bit about some of their contemporary manifestations that are of great concern. Trevor, it's good to have you back. Welcome.
Hey, thanks very much, Frank. Thanks for the opportunity.
I wanted to talk with you particularly about two appointments by the Biden administration that seem emblematic of a larger problem with its personnel. These are two individuals who are intended to be the leaders of the Department of Labor, an organization that an agency that can be of great influence on our economy and on the workforce that powers it. Talk with us about, first, the man who is now the Secretary of Labor, Marty Walsh, former mayor of Boston. What do we know about his background that raises red flags, as far as you're concerned, in this case, literally?
Well, he comes from a union background, which is not in itself problematic. But what he, over the last several years, he's worked very closely with the pro-China element in Boston, the pro-China political element. And I'm talking like groups like Right to the City, the Chinese Progressive Association. These are basically fronts for communist China. And he attends their events. He promotes their causes. He was regularly raising the Chinese flag over Boston City Hall. And
unbelievable.
And also a couple of years ago did a major propaganda exercise for the Chinese as mayor of Boston, attended a big Chinese environmental conference promoting how the Chinese are dealing with global warming, and arranged for a similar conference in the United States. So he's been pushing the communist Chinese line and was elected with the help of pro-China communist front groups in Boston. He's deeply tied to that movement.
And when we talk about people being tied, this would seem not to simply be that he hangs with them, but that he has actually got an affinity for their program, for their policies, for their agenda. Would that be overstating it in this case?
No, it wouldn't. You know, the Chinese Progressive Association in Boston, which was founded many years ago by Maoist students and radicals, and now acts as a semi-official agency of the Chinese Communist Party in Boston. They regularly praise him for his work in carrying out their programs and their initiatives, their their political initiatives that they regularly do in the city. He attends their dinners. They give him awards. So he is deeply tied to this pro-Chinese communist group. And the same pro-Chinese communists in Boston played a very major role in actually electing him. And they take credit for that.
In other words, he would appear to be compromised by them. And this is what's so worrying, is this is not an exception to a rule. It seems to be increasingly the rule in this administration. Let's talk about the woman who has been tapped to be his number two at the Labor Department, Julie Hsu.
Well, it would be a pretty concerning if one of these candidates was backed by the Communist Chinese, but both of them are backed by the Communist Chinese. I mean, the same front groups operating in Boston, their counterparts operating in California, are the people who Julie Hsu has been cooperating with for more than 15 years. So she works very closely with Kent Wong, who is a former member of the Communist Workers' Party and a founder of the Asian Pacific American Labor Alliance. That has extensive ties to Communist China. They have led multiple delegations to that country and worked to implement their to build ties between the American labor movement and the Chinese labor movement. And she also worked with Stuart Kuo, who has extensive connections to the Communist Workers' Party back in the day, and is now a very senior member of the Committee of 100, which I think is China's major influence operation in this country. She was also very tied to the Asian, the United Students Against Sweatshops, which is a front for the Freedom Road Socialist Organization, now known as Liberation Road, which is also a pro-Chinese communist group. So both Walsh and Hsu are connected to the same pro-Chinese communist operations, just on different sides of the country, one in Boston, one in California.
Most people listening to this, Trevor, I think would find it incredible that we have even a single individual in a senior position, a cabinet position inside the United States government, let alone two people who would be running that cabinet agency, and one that does have, as I say, an ability to profoundly affect, well, you know, labor conditions in this country and the labor movement in this country, a target of penetration, subversion, influence operations and the like for, well, many decades, of course, by communists of various characters. I remember Ronald Reagan famously sort of entered politics, having been a Democrat, when he discovered what was going on inside the Screen Actors Guild labor union in Hollywood, and subsequently, you know, exposed that to the Congress, I think to his great credit. This is, it seems though, not just confined to this agency, this couple of individuals, but others in the Biden-Harris administration as well. Give us just a quick rundown, if you could, of some of the highlights of how extensive this problem is, Trevor Loudon.
Well, this also extends to Deb Haaland, who is the Secretary of the Interior. She's now got control over 20% of America's land resources and energy resources. So she's extremely problematic. She was put in place by Judith LeBlanc of the Communist Party USA. The Communist Party USA now completely supports Communist China. And then you have Vinita Gupta, who's been proposed for a very senior position, I think number two or number three in the Justice Department. And she has actually trained for a whole year at a place called the Rockwood Leadership Institute, which is basically run by pro-Chinese communists, very closely connected to the major Chinese Communist Party in this country called Liberation Road. So you have a whole network of pro-China or China-connected operatives now serving in the Biden cabinet, and given the very problematical...
And Trevor, I mean, unfortunately, it's not limited to that. It is also the case that Tony Blinken, the Secretary of State, has been tied to the Chinese Communist Party through, among other things, this Biden Center at the University of Pennsylvania and this consulting firm, West Executive, I think it's called. Jake Sullivan, the National Security Advisor, similarly. I mean, you go sort of down the list, the UN ambassador. Just bottom line, Trevor, we've got less than a minute to say it. What are the implications of this kind of seeming compromise or penetration of our government by, well, the Chinese Communist Party, perhaps among others?
Well, we're living in the Biden-Harris Beijing administration. That's what we're living in now. China has influence in virtually every major cabinet position, and they will use it. You know, that's their history. They will use it against the interests of this country. And we see the Chinese saber rattling that's going on right now. This is horrific implications.
They're doubtless emboldened by what they're seeing going on in Washington. Trevor Loudon, thank you for this important truth-telling. Your insights are indispensable. We appreciate you sharing them with us with regularity here. We'll look forward to talking with you again very soon. Stay well, my friend. In the meantime, Godspeed in your work. Next up, we'll speak with Sam Faddis about what the takeaway from the perspective of an intelligence operative, former intelligence operative, is of all of this and more right after that.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio. Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
We're back. We're joined by another of our regulars here at Secure Freedom Radio, I'm very proud to say. His name is Charles Sam Faddis. He is a man who has served his country in a variety of capacities, including notably as an undercover operative of the Central Intelligence Agency for some 30 years. He was one of the first on the ground before the invasion of Iraq, setting the stage for our successful intervention there. And his contributions to our country continue these days in his capacity as the driving force behind AndMagazine.com. He is also an extraordinarily accomplished author, notably of Beyond Repair, the decline and fall of the Central Intelligence Agency. Sam Faddis, welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. It's good to have you with us.
Great to be here, Frank. Thanks.
I wanted to ask you first and foremost to address a topic that we're just discussing with our colleague Trevor Loudon, namely concerning the degree to which the seemingly extensive ties of individuals now serving in senior positions in the Biden-Harris administration, including at cabinet level in some cases, is giving rise to a coterie of people who seem to be compromised by the Chinese Communist Party, or at the very least, known to be willing to accommodate their preferences. I wanted to get your opinion as a serious national security professional, what the implications are of all of this, the extent to which this could really compromise our national security and perhaps conduce to needless, well, even conflict with the communist Chinese.
You know, Frank, I think it is very difficult to overstate the extent of the, the counterintelligence threat that we face. Although, frankly, even using the term counterintelligence almost understates it. It suggests that all we're talking about is losing information or something. I mean, complete compromise of our government. You wonder really where all of the counterintelligence elements of the intelligence community are. I mean, we're used to sort of the idea of hunting for, you know, the next Rick Ames, CIA officer who spied for Russia, finding a guy somewhere at some level who's passing information and is obviously hurting the Republic. And then now we're looking at a situation where we have, as you say, literally an entire administration at up to and including the cabinet level and the president himself, compromised by our number one enemy on the planet. And by compromised, I don't just mean like they don't have quite the spine we'd like and they're not quite as tough as we would like. I mean, they're literally playing for the other team, and that is the stark reality of where we are. And yet doesn't seem to be anybody even sniffing around this threat.
Yeah, let alone raising the kind of alarm that one would think would be both needed, of course, but also obvious to anybody actually addressing our national interests. And you mentioned the president, Sam. One of the concerns, of course, that has come to the fore again, albeit somewhat obliquely, with the new book promotional tour that his son Hunter is now engaged in, is the degree to which Hunter Biden, through his various dealings with, among others, a former top Chinese spy master, has really compromised his father and the first family to a degree that would at a minimum make them susceptible to blackmail by the Chinese communists, if not simply reflexively inclined to do their bidding. Just walk us through what that means. I can't think of another time in our nation's history when this kind of concern has even been remotely in prospect, let alone documented by the laptop that Hunter has, as I said in my commentary today, somewhat disingenuously said could be his.
Well, I mean, you know, of course, first, as anytime we mention the laptop, I feel required to say I've seen the laptop. I've gone through the laptop extensively. I retain a copy of the drive. There's zero question as to whose laptop that is. It is clearly Hunter Biden's laptop, and it would be a physical impossibility for any intel service to dummy one up. So, you know, that's just baseline and foundational. Hunter, in my opinion, was, of course, the bagman for a family enterprise, and his compromise equals the compromise of his dad. But even if we just focus on Hunter, yes, he's up to his eyeballs in contacts with folks who are senior Chinese Communist Party officials, and he's taken vast amounts of money with them, and God knows how many criminal offenses he's committed along the way. And now this guy's still bouncing in and out of the White House and still apparently trusted by his father. This is that's mind-boggling. I mean, he is clearly bought and paid for, in my opinion, by the Chinese communists, and probably shouldn't be allowed within 100 yards of the White House, much less be able to dance in and out.
Right. Peter Navarro, of course, former President Trump's right-hand guy on an awful lot of these issues, notably the relationship with China in terms of, at a minimum, you know, trade policy and I think much more beyond, has said, having spent a lot of time in the White House complex himself, that having a guy with these proclivities is actually a security risk. You gave short shrift a moment ago to the problem of just having classified information compromised. I know you don't mean to trivialize that. It's just in the great scheme of things, it's a relatively small problem, but it could be a real problem with a guy with Hunter Biden's background and compromises. I have to say, I worry about Joe Biden too in this regard as well, but particularly given the vulnerabilities, which are much in evidence. I mean, it's now documented in his book, for heaven's sakes. The vulnerabilities of a crack cocaine addict to pressure is not to be dismissed.
Look, when you have seen the contents of Hunter Biden's laptop, again, in my opinion, what you see is, in addition to everything else we've talked about, a man with very serious substance abuse issues, and I think underlying serious emotional and psychological problems. This is a guy, frankly, I feel for him in the sense that I think he's literally got demons in his head, at which he is unable to control. So this is a guy who is clearly compromised. And honestly, if I was running Hunter Biden as an intel source, I can tell you that my number one concern would not be whether he would do what I wanted and whether he would more or less do anything for me. It would simply be, is he so out of control that I can keep him from getting caught? I mean, that would be the balance. The fact that he's compromised would be self-evident. And then this guy is wandering in and out of, well, as you say, the White House complex, where the most sensitive information on earth is.
Unfortunately, what we've seen, and I'm thinking of the former National Security Advisor to President Clinton and others, the possibility of getting caught if you happen to be a Democrat and well-connected is de minimis, it seems. And if you are caught, the chances that you're actually going to be punished for it are even more remote. So this is a real concern, and I think should be for all of us, worrying about the direction of our country and whether it's in the hands of people who can be entrusted with particularly our national security. Let me turn to one other piece of this present problem. Actually, I'm now hard out of time. Sam Faddis, we have to leave it at that. Thank you so much for the hard work that you put into continuing to protect our country, something you did, I believe, with great distinction, both in the Central Intelligence Agency over your distinguished career, as well as in the United States Army and in Washington State as an Assistant Attorney General, and so much more. Thank you for all of that, and thank you especially for being one of our regular featured guests and contributors here at Secure Freedom Radio. We look forward to talking with you again very soon. We look forward to talking to the rest of you again tomorrow, same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.